This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 334 of the Countdown Podcast from two bitches who are fully vaccinated. My name is Wayne.
My name is Paul. Wasn't expecting that. Yes, 100% true. If you haven't got your shots yet, what are you waiting for?
Please,
unless
get
you can't, unless you are too young and you're not allowed to yet, in which case, full thoughts with you, and hopefully the government gets its shit together in short order. Exactly. If you're here in Australia.
Doesn't that mean that I can just flop my dick out anywhere now? Is that right? No? That's not the case, right? No.
If you live where we live, you're allowed to flop your dick out here if you're in a West Australian.
Right.
But if you're from anywhere else in the country,
you can't just flop your dick out.
No, you can flop it out there, but not here.
Right. So it's still pretty lockdown-y over here, people.
Well, it's not lockdown-y over here. Our borders are locked.
Borders are locked, yes.
But in Australia, big shout out to all our listeners in the eastern states of Australia who are in lockdown. Again, it's awful. Our thoughts are with you is what we're trying to say. And hopefully we can provide you with a little under an hour worth of relief, unless you play this at times too, in which case you only get 30 minutes. So, yeah.
And you just heard all about my dick flopping, so it's not looking good. what are you going to do?
Generally speaking, I think our audiences are...
Thrill me.
And you just have. What the fuck? Welcome to the soundboard.
Asshole.
Great to have you back as well. Now, Wayne, what is this week's topic?
The top 10. Paul, what's it called again?
Acting
debuts.
Not debuts, as you tried to say at the end of the last episode, which got Justin Winters from the So I Made a Movie Geek podcast very excited.
That's going to be a show, maybe never.
No, probably so, not. Not sure.
Not with Paul at the helm.
Appropriate. And I will be on an upcoming episode of the So I Made a Movie Geek podcast defending my way through the Royal Rumble 2010's movie draft.
Holy crap.
I'm competing in the 2015, was it? I can't remember. It was a good year for films, whatever it was. Some great films are chosen and wait. I will check it out and with a link, give you a link to check out in short order.
You know, I bragged on Justin the other day.
Bragged or ragged?
No, bragged. Oh. I was talking
Winners
with someone.
Winners or Esquivel?
No, Justin.
Sorry, man.
Winters, yeah. Yep. I said to someone, hey, you know that TV show, The Doctors, where there's doctors on daytime TV and there's dudes in scrubs and stuff like that? And she goes, yeah. I said, I know the producer of that. And I'm like, really? Yep. Like,
ex-producer.
Ex-producer, a producer on that show. And she goes, really? Well, yeah. He was on our show one time.
So which episode?
I was like, I can't remember. But it was a good one. And we got his wife on too.
Yeah, we did. We've had Chrissy on as well. Look, all the very best over there in LA too, where rates are rising of coronavirus. It's all fucked. We totally acknowledge. The world's a bit of a fucked place.
It's a fucking
moment.
Piece of shit.
But I'll tell you what's not fucked. Acting debuts.
That's right. Nice. That's cool.
The best acting debuts ever. And that is the topic of this week's countdown. It's pretty straightforward. First acting role in a film. I don't know about you, Wayne, but I didn't go with a little tiny little bit part for 3 seconds. I went with a main role in the film.
Oh, you'll know the shit I'm talking about. Absolutely. Well, you know, you will. Well,
and I also didn't do American / English speaking debuts. So if they were in 50 films previous in a different country, that doesn't count.
Yeah, I let Christoph Waltz go.
Good.
I did.
I'm amazed. / relieved. That's exactly who I was referring to.
There's a few, but yes. No, I didn't do that either.
All right, cool. In that case, we'll get into it on the other side of the segment. Kicks off most shows other than our commentary about the world. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
The recount, the mailroom, the poly. Let's hear it, boy.
Well, last week, episode 333, the list of top 10 undeservedly highly rated Rotten Tomato films. Wayne, you had an easy victory with the poll. Returned 44 votes to you, a lazy 32 to me.
Congratulations on getting that poll thing back up.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to got there. I obviously forgot to turn the poll options off.
Is also a thing that people
somewhere in the order of about 15 extra responses, with the primary one beneath that being released a Prezula cut of Reap, garnering 7 votes. That's 7 people who didn't vote for either you or me. But on the basis of the numbers, I have to assume that would have been 4 who voted for you and 3 for moi.
Well, you never know, Polly.
So an easy win. Well done. That makes it 14-11, I believe, on the year. And let's hear what some of the people had to say about why they voted the way they did. Mark Harris said, Wayne surprisingly made a lot of sense this week. Irishman and Parasite are both overrated, and no country for old balls is absolute shit.
There really is no cunt for old balls. Go on.
Erica San Pedro said, I 100% agree with Wayne on Parasite. That murderous rage at the end came out of nowhere. Paul lost my vote by putting Dirty Dancing and Grease on his list.
I think... Well, Dirty Dancing. Yeah.
I maintain, if you got votes this week, because people hated your list less. I did well.
Anything you want to take from it, Paul, take.
Stephen Burns, who is the most egregious member of the Wayne voting block, said, I vote for Wayne for being the most Wayne-y ever, getting all worked up at how low a movie was before realizing he not only doesn't have it on his list, but has never actually seen it. I mean, come on. That's a block member.
It was a fine moment.
Eat my ass!
Balls, 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 balls. Jonathan Kidd said, I really want Wayne to catch up, but not with these lists. Not sure whether he abstained or not.
That's fine.
And then, look, there was a whole bunch of people who gave me votes for Forrest Gump, but more people who shat on me for
having Forrest Gump. Yeah, I think that was Gump. That's why you didn't make it this week, I think.
And I'll give last word to Laurie Miller, who said, I voted for Paul in the last 5 to 6 polls. So now I feel like a parent who spends way too much attention on their kid who's a great athlete. Thank you. Musician, not so much. But then suddenly remembers they have other offspring and try to make up for it in some pathetic way. Vote goes to Wayne.
So you're talking about the pity vote, we're saying. Okay. All right.
Wayne will take them.
I will.
Thank you to everyone who took the time to vote in the Facebook community. That's the only place you can vote on week to week. Once again, now the polls are back. So please join up there if you're a regular listener to the show and haven't yet got on board.
Hey, Paul, can I ask you something?
Oh, shit.
Last week, right, you mentioned the Idris Elba song.
I didn't play it.
No, you didn't play it. That's fine. Sorry. That's fine.
I thought, given that, actually, you got quite a few votes because you mentioned women domineering being fun.
Really?
Netflix and Swill's Dan was like, he quoted that line in his retweet of the episode. So he was particularly enamored.
Nice work. And it is fun. So, but you were talking about Idris Elba, right?
Yep.
So, because I went and listened to the song because you put me onto the song. So, I'm listening to him rap. Did you know that he's actually a DJ before he's an actor? That's right. Anyway, it's a silent.
Being a DJ doesn't mean you're a good rapper.
No, it doesn't. But get this. I think he wrote the rap, and I looked at a YouTube video, like a lyric video of it. And one of the lyrics that he raps is, in 2 minutes, I'll clean out your man, then I'll come clean out your mouth like a toothpick.
No, we're not doing this. What we're going to do instead is we're actually going to play the fucking song now.
Okay.
Just this bit, and then we'll use that as our lead into the next, even though it has nothing to do with acting debuts. Enjoy Idris Elba rapping the shit out of this particular song from Pops and Chills.
Okay, did you hear that, Paul? In 2 minutes, I will clean out your man, then I'll clean out your mouth like a toothpick. For some reason, I hung on to it, and I think what he's saying here is, in 2 minutes, I will beat up all your men, then I'm going to come back and put my really small penis in your mouth.
Oh.
That's what it says, because the line is, then I'll clean out your mouth like a toothpick. As if Idris Elba's got a dick small enough to fall between your teeth. What else could that line mean? What else could it mean?
There's no way this episode goes down. Countdown law for any other reason than you over-examining an Idris Elba bit from a song. Like I said, he ain't no rapper.
No, but like, who wrote that line? We can write anything in the line that rhymes with pick. But he did this. I was like, oh. So I don't know what's going on here, Paul, but no one picked that up. And frankly, it has to mean, what else could it mean?
I don't know.
What else?
Let us know what you think. What Idris Elba was going on about there.
Glad we got that in.
All right, well, top 10. Top 10 acting debuts.
Debuts.
Is the subject of this week's countdown. Sorry. Acting debuts. Is the subject of this week's countdown. And yeah, I think we've already established parameters. Let's get straight into it then. I'll lead off.
Hit it.
Number 10 for me.
Yep.
Might be a surprise because I hate this fucking guy. I think he's sold out. I think he's shit. Now. God damn, back in the 80s, he was one talented motherfucker.
Who are we talking about?
You know, he motherfucked a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
48 Hours.
A little low.
Reggie Hammond. Okay, on your list?
Yeah. Absolutely.
He was on fire here. Like, he'd come off Saturday Night Live. This is even pre...
Had he done Raw?
No, Delirious and Raw after this.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, 83, 84, 84, 85.
So he's truly, like, only on TV.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're familiar...
And not even acting. In a comedy show.
No, yeah, exactly. So here he is, and he is sharp. He's fucking funny.
Reggie Hammond was cool, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. Cool as fuck.
And Nick Nolte's like...
Nick Nolte was like, oh, I was meant to be the fucking star of this shit. Mm-hmm. Wrong, Nick Nolte. Wrong.
Now, I saw this as a youngster in the bits that my parents saw, let me see you, and I was walking in and that. And I remember the fight between him and Nolte in the fucking, like, in the alley. And it was like this... They just psh, psh, and they're throwing shit at each other, saying shit to each other. And as the car leaves, Nick Nolte just blunters him in the face and then drives away. Cool shit like that. Plus the fact that I learned that some people, because I would have seen this in my, I don't know, I was fucking young as shit.
Oh, yeah, of course. Right? 82, this film came out.
Yeah, and then Eddie Murphy, there's a scene where he goes to this woman and says, like, I'm going to have some sex, y'all, right? And then he goes up, talks to some woman, is not especially polite to her. And then he's like, yeah, listen, you want to pay for a motel? She's like, well, you can't even pay for a motel. So she was already in. And like, he was doing smooth shit like that. She was like, I don't know.
Smooth shit for 82. I'm not sure that any of that you're shit right.
It wasn't smooth, but like,
Four decades later.
Had, as a youngster who had never even talked to a woman before, I'm like, is that something that people do? Can you just walk up to?
When Wayne found out that none of this. Domineered. That's interesting, he said.
And does not work for me. He also learned. Not that I'd ever do that. Okay, please. Nice one.
Right. My 10. Your 10, 10. Please.
My number 10. Funny one, this one, but I've always thought it. Whitney Houston in The Bodyguard.
Oh, God.
Dude, all right. First of all, fuck you and eat my balls. Because second, The Bodyguard's a great movie. It's a great fucking movie. You got your Kevin Costner. Yes, Whitney Houston, who previously was all, how will I know? And shit like that. But like, then she became like an actor. And I'm like, how are we going to have a songstress act across Kevin Costner, who was the shit? He was the shit at the time, right?
Bitch, please.
Well, no, this is something I commented on to the people I was watching it with. I'm like, she fucking nailed that role. She played a bitchy ass, like, diva, right?
Really? She nailed that?
Dude, but the point is, though, like, I'm sitting there going, that was a perfect choice. Like, they actually did this. And, like, because you could have just hired an actress to be that. But no, and the fact that she did all... The soundtrack to The Bodyguard is the fucking tits, man. Oh, Queen of the Night is a great fucking song.
I stand resolute, mother music, bitch.
Queen of the Night is the tits, let me tell you. All right? But she also... yes, she's playing herself, but it was so perfect in the role. Made the movie great, man. Made it so great that
Does she have a song where she's consternated and completely and utterly shocked by a stupid choice? Because I'll play that one.
Yeah, it's called Fuck Off, Paul.
How would I know? It was so shit.
Well, that was almost worth it. Whitney Houston, The Bodyguard. I'm telling you, she nailed it.
Wow. Word. All right. Take that for what you will. My number 9 is... I had to... This was hard. So I picked the film before I picked the actor. Because I'm like, this film has carte blanche on... film debuts. Not every member of the cast hasn't been in a film before, but a good proportion of the one. And originally, I was thinking, Josh Brolin, fucking good in this movie as a big older brother.
Oh.
Then I went, you know what? Nah, he wasn't the standout. Who was the standout in the Goonies, Wayne?
Chunk. I thought you were going to say Sloth.
No. Jeff Cohen.
Oh, fuck off.
Come on. He personifies the friend that you had, you gave shit to when you were a kid. And don't lie, we all had those friends.
Yeah, and if you don't know who it is, it was you.
Oh, hot damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought he was brilliant. And that, you know what? Won me over and got it on this list.
Jelly Belly?
No, not when he did the Truffle Shuffle.
Truffle Shuffle, that's what it's called, yes.
No, it's when he's doing the monologue.
Throwing up?
Yeah, they're interrogating him about Bob. He's like, what's... Well, one time I was upstairs in the movie theater and I followed and I was just like, ooh,
he's doing the hurting,
and I threw the fake...
And then that Tortelli guy's laughing at him. I like this fucking kid.
Fucking brilliant.
Well, it's a funny one you say that, because Chunk was like Chunk, right? But because that actor actually went on, he's now an entertainment lawyer in the States.
Yes, exactly. He doesn't act anymore. I think this might
have been his only role.
His only cinematically released film. I looked this up. He was in a bunch of other TV and Disney shit for about 3 or 4 years or 5 years afterwards. And then he just got out of the game and, as you say, moved into...
So he kind of muted. Yeah.
And you see a picture of him, at least on IMDb.
Skinnier guy now.
Svelte as fuck.
Yes, yeah. Svelte. Man, if you grow up being Chunk and everyone knows you as that fat fuck who fucking danced, you're going to lose some weight. You're going to get a few complexes, you're going to have a few eating disorders, and you're going to lose some weight. And you live in LA, forget about it.
Probably a good time for me to mention that a lot of the, as you would expect, maybe a lot of the choice on my list are young people. Normally, I'm not a big fan of child actors, but every so often when they hit it hard in terms of being like perfect,
yeah,
really resonates.
I got a couple on mine too.
Because generally speaking, kid actors are shit.
I'm much the same on that, you know, absolutely. So yes, nice one. Of course, my number 9 is not a kid actor, and I'm a little afraid to say, perplexed to say that I'm a fan of this.
You're perplexed and ashamed and whatever else you said.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. Please continue. I've got the soundboard ready now.
Oh, shit. All right. Fine. It's Jason Statham in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Flaps. You're fat. What? Block this is fine. It. This Stupid. Is fine. You were just going to play this no matter what I said.
Yeah, pretty much.
I could have sent your mother snatch and be like, flack, flack, flack. So anyway.
I would have said.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Dicks. All right. Jason Statham. Now, when I saw Lockstock, right? You would think the Nick Moran guy is the one because I actually saw it because Sting was in it. Right?
He's a bloke that disappeared off the earth, Nick Moran.
Dude, he was, yeah, you're right. He was literally, what, one, two movies? I can't even name him. He just went. But he should have been the breakout star from that film. But guess what? Even though Ranga did better than him, he was in Van Helsing.
I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I can't remember his name too.
Fleming.
Fleming, yeah.
Someone, Jason Fleming.
There you are. But Jason Statham, I would say, is the biggest guy who got out of this. It wasn't Vince Jones, and it wasn't fucking...
Well, Vinny Jones is the biggest... Well, not anymore, but he was at the time for a long, long time.
Man, Jason Statham has kicked the fuck out of that.
Soccer career. You're missing football career.
Yeah. So in terms of who progressed most, it would have to be Jason Statham. But more importantly, the reason I liked his role here is he was the likable, larrikin, silly motherfucker, and he also gave me a hope that a bald man could be good looking. And so there was a few things that were going on.
You just won Sam Hurley's vote.
And so, yeah, I really liked his role in this is the one I do remember. I remember Nick Moran getting up off the card table and that funny cool camera angle thing.
Was attached to them.
Yes. But then I remember Jason Statham blowing the perfect marijuana smoke ring as well.
It all makes sense.
So I like Jay Stay in Lockstock. Word.
Sure. All right. My number eight is another child actor and one who I think has done really good things since, but I think everyone would agree that this was her greatest performance. At number eight, it's True Grit. Hayley Steinfeld as Maddie Ross.
Fucking A, bro. Fucking A.
A remake film based off a John Wayne film, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. Alone could have been a problem or should have been a problem, but I guess the Coen brothers being behind the scenes on it, but then having what a cast, like Josh Brolin, dude, and Matt Damon and absolutely. Jeff Bridges, and then who steals the fucking show here and gets a nomination as Best Supporting Actress? Hayley Steinfeld, this little 14-year-old girl.
100p.
Who beat 15,000 teenage girls who applied for this role, according to a couple of different websites that really? I read. That's just astounding. And she'd done commercials and short films before, but she actually held her own amongst these veteran.
Bro, she's the thing I remember
actors.
About this film.
Yeah.
And I love this film.
Just her, like, I don't know, her precociousness. No, that's not the right word. No. She's just so confident. And yes. She's like, fuck this. This is what's going to happen. You're going to avenge my dad.
What it was that you bought the presence.
Yeah.
She's there popping guns and shit at this age, all right? Saying shit and talking to the male leads who are old grizzled fucking cowboy motherfuckers. And actually, and then the camera's on her and I don't know what it is. The camera loves it. This fucking nails it, right? I think it's just that she is a good actress. Yeah. Bumblebee. She made that Bumblebee movie better than
I would
it
say
was.
Less than Bumblebee, a film you haven't seen. More than Bumblebee, sorry. The Edge of 17.
Yes, I've not
very
seen
good
this.
In that movie.
Really? Mm. I actually just like her work. I even like...
Don't say like her fucking music.
I like...
Don't.
Capital letters, everyone. Go look up the music video, all right? And just check it out, just for your own information. Because I think it's on the 50 Shades Freed soundtrack.
That makes it perfectly okay.
But yes, Hayley Steinfeld. I went to see Bumblebee because of her, not because of fucking Transformers. So there you go.
Yeah, or because of the show. We were reviewing it.
Yeah, that's right. That's where I saw it.
All right, well, I'm interested to see how high that is on your list then. I think we have a lot of crossovers this list.
No, this is going to be a lot. That's why I'm trying to go a little weird here.
Silver City.
Well, speaking of music and so on, my number eight, I'm going to bat for Eminem in 8 Mile.
Well, that's a good choice. I didn't
you know what I'm
one.
Saying? Yep. So this movie...
Once again, I like the way you're really mining this singer who becomes an actor and plays a singer. Well done.
There you go. Well, you know, it's a movie debut, but it was one that I was impressed with. Because 8 Mile, okay, so it's got Kim Basinger. You'd think I'd remember that.
I'm impressed because now we've got a song to go out on.
Don't lose yourself, Paul. Now, this movie is way better than it has any right to be because I remember hearing, oh, it's the Eminem story. Who gives a fuck? All right? He was like, you know, I'm Slim Shady, your mom can say, you know, and all that shit. So then he goes down.
Like they're top of me.
And this is the thing. Eminem was as big as you can get, you know? I mean, like, even though he's a rapper and this and that, his songs were fucking huge. So he's just popping everything. So then this movie shows about how he came up with his D12 or whatever, and then Kim Basinger is his mom who fucks people in the trailer.
And Wayne's like, so close.
It was a really good shot. Anyway, and then he has, you know, but it's a really tough, hard story, and I was impressed by the whole film. And you know what? It didn't end where all of a sudden he was great. All it ended with was the rap battle where he nailed that guy, and apparently Eminem is a mad freestyler anyway, right? And it fucked up the other guy, and it was like, oh, and it's just him walking off into the night. There was no actual, oh, now he's rich, or now he's famous. Or no, it was just him winning that one thing, and it made the whole movie awesome. So, telling you, this is impressive ass shit.
Okay, nice choice. My number seven is from a South African film.
The Tiffany King. Oh, I got it too.
Yes, you'll know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, we got this. Before you go on about this. No, before you go on about this, right? I want to tell you something, right?
Yep.
If I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't know why, because it's South African, right? Things, right?
Yep.
If I'm dating you and you're a South African girl,
oh,
for some reason, I know your dad is racist. Okay, I just know it. Right? That's how it is, right? And
I
and
disagree. I know the dad better than the girl, but I know a South African gentleman who's not at all racist.
Of course, there are probably quite as many like that as there aren't. But in my head, I wanted that to be the case because I wanted to meet him and wait for him to slip up because he would be well, like, well, oh,
but you're brown.
No. It would go like this. He'd go like, hello, your name is Wayne, is it? Nice to meet you, right? And then he'd turn his back and say, oh, I can't believe Lindsay brought home a fucking brownie.
We're being racist now.
Yeah, no.
You realize the irony
here. It's funny. I'm already brown. It's cool. And I'll say, what's that, sir? And he'll say, diplomatic immunity.
Now we made a movie joke. Yeah, that's all okay.
Okay, there you are.
Obviously, we don't subscribe to any of that shit.
Don't give a disclaimer. You're ruining the mood.
I'm just covering my eyes.
I know.
But what is a great film by a great South African director starring a great South African actor is District 9.
Absolutely, bro.
Chantal Copley.
Slightly low.
In this particular film and as a Vickers of Vandermeer. Now, I know I've lost someone's vote. Maybe you have as well. I think it was Jamie Davies. He's like, hates this film. Hates it. And I just don't understand.
You don't like
this film's ever.
What? This thing was a revelation.
It's not only Chartel's.
Charlton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
You said Chartel.
Not only his acting debut, it's also Neil Blomkamp's directorial debut.
Which is even more impressive.
If you're ever going to have a acting debut, directorial debut duo, this film wins. Hands fucking down.
Who produced this? Because this was called something. It was Someone Presents District 9. Because it was
Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson, yep. That's right. And I'm like, why the hell would this happen? And then you see it, and it becomes like, I mean, what do you call them? Slums, favelas, whatever. And it's a massive statement on apartheid and all that sort of stuff.
Right? It's a huge, huge allegory for apartheid and racial discrimination. Hence our very clever satirical jokes earlier on.
Yes. Which no doubt you're still laughing or complaining about.
Or having switched off a long time ago and not having heard that particular follow-up. But I think his bureaucratic role.
Oh, he was great.
So perfectly cast as that. And then, of course, he transforms in the way that he transforms in the course of the film. And it's, I guess, less his acting performance, but still such a great arc for the character to go
through.
And
it's amazing that Paul likes this film because it actually does change fucking...
It cheats.
It cheats, and Paul still likes it, which means he's full of shit. So...
I guess that's what I'm saying is it cheats so well you don't even notice until you really go back to think.
Every film's got
to
cheat this well, is what you're saying. Okay,
if you're going to cheat, don't get caught until I've seen it three times. In that case, you win.
Fair to say. His whole, like you said, the bureaucrat thing with the, when I saw him do the thing, like he set the fucking camp on fire, like boom, boom, you hear that popping? Or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, my God, why is this so compelling to watch him run around and dart around? He's the shit, actually.
He's
so,
a cunt.
And, yeah, he's a cunt.
And he basically gets what he deserves.
That's right. And he's also Murdoch from the A-Team.
Less important and not a debut. Moving on.
Whatevers. Number seven, people. There's an actor and his name is Ewan McGregor.
Heard of him.
Yes. And he did a movie that when I had heard of this film, the only reason I went to see it is because I was trying to impress some indie chick. The film was called Shallow Grave and it was by...
And the chick's name was...
I actually can't remember her name, but is it like fucking just out of high school style? I can't remember this movie out. But anyway, Shallow Grave. That's right, bro. Up we up up. Now, Shallow Grave is about these flatmates. One's an accountant, one's a doctor, one's a journalist. That's Ewan McGregor. And they're searching for a fourth roommate for their trendy ass flat. They settle on this aloof motherfucker named Hugo.
How expensive are rents? What is it, a doctor, an accountant, and a lawyer, and they can't afford a fucking rent?
That makes sense. They're all very young, so I don't know if one's an intern. Or anyway, the point is, they get this dude in, and there's a lot of scenes with them interviewing people and just shitting all over them, and it's like, it's a bit weird. But anyway, they all find this, like, Hugo dies of a drug overdose. There's a huge sum of cash next to him. They all split him up. They all start cross-fucking each other up. Now, Ewan McGregor in it was really Scottish. Like, and it was set in Scotland, so to be fair. But... But I could sort of not understand.
Hot damn.
I couldn't really understand what he's saying in some scenes. But,
hot damn.
I know, it's just a racist episode, Paul. Fuck you, alright? Well, I couldn't, alright? A lot of people can't understand me, and it doesn't offend me. So, but I do remember that...
Vindication!
Shut up, Scott! What an asshole.
asshole. I don't know why this asshole's here, everyone. Fuck you and your soundboard.
You keep serving them up.
Anyway,
I'm
going to
keep smashing them back over the net.
Can I just say that Ewan is the only thing I remembered about this film other than like the fact that when I was watching him...
You and me both.
Well done. But it's one of the few times I've watched a guy I've not known and gone, oh, he's actually got talent. I'm watching someone be cool, and if someone else doesn't notice this, then the whole world is blind. So that's my Ewan McGregor crush started thing.
Okay.
There you are.
Fair enough. That's your seven, right? My number six is another young actor, actress, whichever you prefer, from Logan. It's Daphne Keene as Laura/X-23.
Because I had Hayley Steinfeld on my list, I put her on an honorable mention, but you're absolutely on board. Absolutely.
Fair enough. I just think she sells completely both the aggressive side, the defensive side of her character, and the vulnerable side.
Absolutely.
And for someone, I'm not sure, have we seen her in anything else since?
I was trying to think about it, and I don't think we have, and it's weird. She shouldn't do a Newt thing where she just, you know, sort of bounces off of this huge hit. She's got to be this shit. And she was really, I think that's the second thing I remember about Logan, how good it was that this girl was on there. Like, she was amazing.
Apparently she was in a film called Anna, as directed by Charles McDougall, A Journey of Friendship, Gangsters in Insolvency. And must be one of the stars because she plays the title character. Never even heard of it, and apparently very few people have. So
I think her agent needs to get off his ass.
It does seem strange. That 2017, it's a long while ago. What is she doing? And there isn't a potential for an X-23 film, which they keep talking about. And I'd love to see that based on what I saw of this performance.
If this guy handles it, absolutely.
You know, as a swan song for Logan, it was an incredible film. But as potentially, I guess, the introduction to a great new character in that sort of gone now cinematic universe, I guess. Maybe that's why it's still.
Yeah. Well,
I'd love to see her in more and see what she can deliver because she was fantastic.
Due to shit. My number six is freaking Eddie Murphy, man, is Reggie Hammond. So
okay, I have stolen a lot of your thunder so far.
In fact, it's going to whip through these last few.
I'm pretty sure you won't have my number five in your list. I'm not even sure you've seen it. From 12 Years a Slave is Lupita Nyong'o as Patsy.
I've not seen 12 Years a Slave because I'm not a strong enough man. Apparently it's a hard watch.
Very hard watch. It's also a very good film directed by Steve McQueen. Won the Academy Award from 2013. And she is the slave who's basically abused by her sociopathic owner.
Michael, what's
her?
It?
Yes, Fassbender.
Fassbender, yep. Yes.
Her despair, her just grief at this treatment, and you know, obviously you got to put yourself back in that time. It just comes through the screen, to be cliched for a moment. Like, it really hits you in the face.
I'm actually imagining how that would be, and I'm upset.
And I had no idea this was her acting debut when I watched this. I was just working my way through it, working my way through the IMDb Top 250. It's time to watch this one. I've heard it's a hard watch. Kevin Smith cried. Oh, Kevin Smith cried. That's a normal film. So I just move on.
Yeah.
That was my joke.
I got it.
I know Troy's laughing. Troy Spinner from the Comic Confidential Podcast is having a giggle slightly at that one. But otherwise, I was completely taken aback. She went on to be in Us and Little Monsters and a host of other films.
Yes.
She has a great range, and her performance is the central argument. I mean, no, it's Chiwetel Ejiofor, but she's really what brings it, and was honored, I believe, by Academy Award. If not, she bloody well should have been.
Can I ask you, because I think there was some scuttlebutt about Michael Fassbender, a bit like saying, wow, this is like, who would pick this role as a, you know, sort of in this day and age? Is he like really convincing as that asshole?
He's good.
Yeah.
Everyone's good in the film. The only person who doesn't really work in the film is, and he's a producer on it, is Brad Pitt.
What? Yeah, he's in it.
Yeah, Brad Pitt's in it, and he's in it as a kindly kind of white.
I didn't know that.
Lord slave owner, but his slaves live normal. Slaves live as normal lives as they can, and he's very sympathetic and whatever. But he's just too good looking to be.
Yeah,
that
I was just
age.
Thinking that. You know what?
And he's he just stands beautiful. Out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
So, other than that, perfectly cast.
Also known as the best problem to have ever.
Yep.
Okay, number five is Charlton Copley, man. So we're back to you again, son.
My number four, also not going to be on the list. It's one of the great Scream Queen debuts. It is from Jamie Lee Curtis from Halloween in 1978 as Laurie Strode. Carpenter wasn't keen to cast her, but eventually, because of her heritage, because she is the daughter of Janet Leigh and Tony Curtis. And
really? Is that why he didn't want to cast her?
Yeah, he's like, fuck off, nepotism.
Yeah.
But apparently she won him over and she kills it in the role. She's such a perfect girl next door. Like, say what you will about Jamie Lee Curtis, whether you think she's horrendously attractive or not, she plays that girl next door perfectly. Like, she's just attractive enough to be like, yes, that girl's nice.
Interesting you say that. Because the first time I saw her was in Trading Places and she was naked and I was like, breasts are great.
You're right.
And so...
which was what, 5 years later after this film,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, yeah, I was a kid.
So, well, she was a kid basically in this film. I think she's, I mean, she's playing 17. She might have been slightly older, 2021, but she was not old at all.
Mm.
And just kills that vulnerable type who also has a bit of a strength and fights back and eventually holds her own without actually taking Michael out. So
cool.
Yeah.
Nice one. Yeah, that had to be on your list, man. Absolutely. Yeah,
it would have been a bit disingenuous to have left her off.
Cool, cool. My number four is a film I watched many years ago with my family, and it sort of left an odd impression on me. It's called The Killing Fields.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the actor is Hang En... Hang S... No, there you go.
You're probably going to do any better.
Right. Now, I, as a youngster watching this, because it's the total 80s, right? It's about basically the crimes and humanities carried out by dictators and tyrants, focusing on probably Pol Pot. Pol Pot, yeah, he's genocide in Cambodia, basically.
Cambodia. Thank you.
We can't make a cum joke here, man. We just can't. Point of case, I remember that a friend of mine actually went to the killing fields in Cambodia like maybe 10 years ago or something. And he said just walking around, because you can see remains and stuff like that still, apparently.
Yeah, they have towers of skulls there.
Yeah, and all that sort of shit. He said he just sat down and started crying. And I was like, yeah, I kind of get that, right? And then this movie here is about... He's a journalist, and Hang plays like this translator. And long story short, it's about him trying to get out of Cambodia with these journalists, and then something happens and he can't get away. Like the passport photos came out black or something, so they couldn't get him out of the country. And then he starts crying. And as a kid, I started crying because I remember going, holy shit, right? Having this issue with it. And later on that year, he actually got the Academy Award for this movie.
Right.
And
best supporting actor.
Right. And he came up there and he was sort of crying because he's not an actor. He was actually...
someone who lived through it.
No, he was just not an actor. But he has like family and stuff like that who went through it and stuff like that, yeah. Right? But he was found at a wedding party. Like he was in a party with the director, and the director looked at him and said, I reckon this guy never acted before.
Wow.
Then he gets an Academy Award. And I was like, holy shit.
Did he ever act again?
I don't think so, man. Or if he has, I've heard of nothing. And this was back in the day, man. It's like
85.
Fucking, yeah, he actually... Say. Oh, he spent 4 years of his life... Yeah, toiling in the actual killing fields, right, before escaping to Thailand, and that's how he got to America. Wow. After that. So, yeah, it's just huge that this non-actor could get an Academy Award. What? So very impressive.
I've never seen that film, so I couldn't.
It's pretty. I don't know how it would age, but I took it very seriously at the time. So, you know.
There's something, this is going to get way too serious for,
that's all right,
for this show, but
I'm
conscious that we are running short.
Let's hear the shift. So even with my fucking South African story?
we moved a long way from 10 minutes ago. So when I went to Paris, I went through the catacombs.
Yes. And
the catacombs are all...
Did you? Yeah. How was it?
Well, it was... Look, it would have been probably much more unsettling than it was, because as it turned out, we had a random Australian mother approach us with her 12-year-old daughter, myself and friend of the show, Brett.
Mm.
And she said, are you guys going down? I can't deal with claustrophobic situations.
Mm.
Would you mind? You're from Australia. I'm from Australia. Therefore, you must be okay. So she just gives her 12-year-old daughter to Brett and I. Well, I don't think we are the most trustworthy looking people
in the
world. No,
especially Brett. Look at him. Hey, Brett, what's up, dog?
Sorry, Brett. No, I include both of us in this description, having been traveling for a month at that stage. And so we walked through it. I was very conscious of this responsibility suddenly being thrust upon me, like, oh my God, nothing bad can happen to this little girl while she's with
no
us.
No shit, man.
So I probably didn't take it in for the way that it was. But there was this gravitas to that situation. And I... Reflecting then, as you were talking about what it would be like to those atrocities happened in our lifetime or very close to them,
yeah,
right? Versus what happened in the Black Plague in hundreds of years ago, right? So
sure.
I would imagine it's only that much more exaggerated when you are confronted by it, let alone having lived through it.
Exactly. I mean, it's all stories until you see it, right? Until it's in front of you. So I can, I mean,
you know, in the same way that you go, I mean, even more contemporarily than if you went to places like Auschwitz and whatever else.
Oh man, when I went to the fucking the World War II Museum in Washington, I was like, because they recreate the fucking hovels and everything, and I was like, fucking, this is tough. But I remember thinking to myself, if I had a kid ever, I won't. But if I had, right, I would bring his ass here or her ass here.
Right.
So there you go. All right, cool. Back to the countdown. The
serious moment of the show is done. Moving on. My number three, and my top three were set in stone. Not the order, but the three that would be my top performances. I'm the first to admit acting's the last thing in a film that really affects me, unless it's egregiously bad or wonderfully amazing.
Sure.
And these three I would classify as all wonderfully amazing.
I think I know what two of them are, but I don't know what the third is. So this will be interesting.
Well, this will be the one that shocks you then. Because if you don't have my top two on in your top two, then I'm going to win this and win it by a fucking landslide.
Yeah, which is fine. Right? Maybe.
My number three is Natalie Portman in Leon the Professional.
Ah, no, not on my list.
That's not the one.
And I understand.
The next two, for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. As Matilda. So at that point in time, 1994, pretty young myself to see a character who's 7 or 8 years younger than we were at that particular point in time. Just absolutely carve up. Like, you instantly throw in with her. Those moments where she's walking up to his door when her whole family's being slaughtered.
Yeah, and she's trying to think about knocking the door.
She's crying, but trying not to be heard as she's crying.
Yeah, I know.
They are heartbreaking.
That whole scene where he's like putting the gun up, he's looking at through the window and he's like, open the door, man.
Is
open
he
going to
open the door or not? He's making that decision.
And then finally, he does the light goes on her face, that. And I'm like, that's a good fucking scene.
It's a great scene. It's so acted. It's well directed too. As much as I hate like Jean Luc Besson, here's where he got it all right.
No, here's well the cut we saw of that.
Irrelevant.
Yeah.
To Natalie Portman's performance, and obviously she's going to have a huge career. She's been Academy Award nominated multiple times. She may even have won a Best Supporting. I can't remember.
No surprise, but you know what is a surprise to me? I saw this interview with her where she said after she did Star Wars, no one would touch her for like a year or something. And she had to bribe. She said I knew someone who knew someone who said, please put Natalie Portman in this film because they thought no one could.
She sucked. Everyone sucked this movie. George Lucas' direction was in those movies. That was so bad.
Bro, to make your actress careers, do this.
Like, other than Ewan McGregor doing a very good Alec Guinness.
Yes, that was good, but that's because he did that, right? Now, he obviously directed Natalie Portman to say, I cannot do nothing and talk like that. Even when she did it, I was listening to it going, is that a parody? Yeah. Because it was just so out of place. But it amazes me that people in Hollywood didn't go, let's look at the body of the rest of her work instead of just
But we're taking away from what this film
is. Yeah, yeah,
imagine
this
being 12 years old and just nailing this role so much.
I remember I saw on Dave Letterman when she was this age saying that I had to skip out of third and fourth period to do. Jeez. Like, that's how fucking shit. So yeah, it's an amazing story.
All right, cool.
Nice one. My number three is freaking Hayley Steinfeld in True Grit.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, that's how much I like her.
Fair.
That's
it's a great, great performance. All right, have your top two been mentioned?
Nope.
No, neither of mine.
So
they're the same. And are they in the same order?
They're transposed, I'm sure of it.
Let's see. My number two. Now, I want you to imagine something here, listener, and indeed you, Wayne.
Hmm.
2,000 guys apply or audition for this role. You get picked out of 2,000 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Your entire film, which stars a big name Hollywood person at the time in the mid-90s.
Oh, yes.
Right? Hinges on this one moment, really, where you have to flip from what you've been displaying the previous 90 minutes of this film, maybe 100 minutes of the film, into the complete opposite.
Yep.
And you've got to nail that moment because the whole film rests on it. And it's not even putting that moment on Richard Gere.
No.
No, we're putting this on Edward Norton.
Ed Norton, of course, yes. It's flipped. Oh! But I knew you'd have the other one on number one. Okay. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but in my head, this is the one that impressed me more, slightly more.
Tell us what you appreciate about Edward Norton's role in Primal Fear.
Okay, so picture it. Whenever it was. Sicily, yes. And I remember going, I went with the Scooby Gang. I went with you and with Joe, because me and Joe talked about it, right? And we saw this, the Primal Fear, in the cinema, and there's Richard Gere, still, you know, relatively high riding.
Yeah, absolutely. In the mid-90s.
Right, and this kid, not a guy.
Around the time Gerbil Gate,
yeah. Yeah, shame that. To me, Edward Norton looked like a teenage boy. That's what he looked like to me. Because obviously I'd never seen him before, but I was looking at him, and he's got this thing, and he's got this stutter that he's putting on. He's gangly, he's weird looking in this show, funny hair. At the beginning of the movie, he's running, he's got blood on him, you know? And then you see him in the shell, and he's talking to Richard Gere. And then at the very, very end, when he does that flip and go, "Who?" And then he's doing sort of a kind of a drawly, kind of a southern, like, "Yeah, yeah, well, I almost had you," you know, kind of thing, right? That was the shit. And I went, "Oh my god, how did they even get someone to turn like that?" Like you say. And then even Joe was saying to me, "Yeah, you'd feel like a real dickhead if you were Richard Gere's character after that." That's how big it was. So for me, I was like, "Damn, this motherfucker can nail it." And I remember
the entire film rides on you believing that scene.
And that scene is just him and Richard Gere in like the cell between them kind of shit. And he got him off. It's like, oh, look at that. And then now it's like, what do you do? Because then you can't destroy your own career. Boom. So
it'd be like kind of, maybe I'm exaggerating here. You've got Michael Jordan in his prime in your team. Don't give the ball to Jordan. Give the ball to Luke Longley.
Yeah. It was like that. Who did he give it to? I can't remember. Whatever the playoffs were. Like, I remember seeing that game of Jordan and he fucking passed it off. And that guy
probably Scottie Pippen.
It wasn't Pippen. It was a white guy. It was like
Bill Kerr.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
no,
anyway.
Maybe I'm mixing up the name. No, no, I know who you're talking about. I can't give him off the top of it. If it's not Bill Kerr, who it is.
Sorry, it's right here. Stockton. He's the assist guy, right?
John Stockton played for fucking... Didn't ever play...
Clearly it wasn't John Stockton. Yeah. Okay, cool. What up?
We'll move on.
We'll move on. We can all cut that.
Our spin-off podcast, Basketball Memories Unite.
No, poor basketball memories.
It's not going to happen. All right, cool. That's your two. No, that's my two. What's your number two?
My number two is your number one. So let's just fucking...
Is it? Let's find out.
It's definitely. It's fucking Alan Rickman. Of course it's Alan Rickman in Die Hard. Of course it is. Okay?
I have two myself.
Ah, see? Now, Alan Rickman, because I had to look this up and I said, there's no way this is his first role. He's a theater actor before, so it is. It's his first acting debut.
Sometimes I think we've done this topic before. And I'm just too bothered. I can't really go into the first 150 episodes to find out.
What is the way? I don't know. And for all I know, we've discussed this before.
I think maybe we did character actors and maybe that's where...
Probably.
Yeah, okay.
Well, in the research, Rickman revealed that he didn't take this role initially because he didn't think Die Hard was the kind of film he wanted to make. Of course, he's some Shakespearean-ass actor, theater.
Makes sense.
Like, the fuck are you going to be this guy? But the thing is, he wasn't a mustache-twirling bad guy. He was a fucking cool motherfucker, and he was
ruthless
enough while still looking great in that suit. And Forbes. And so... He has two myself.
Oh, no, that's what Takagi's wearing.
I have two myself. Right. So, and the first time that happened, because you could sit there thinking, maybe he's a gentleman thief, until he's like, you're just going to have to kill me. Okay, blam, and takes out fucking the dude, right? From there, it's like, and then you see Bruce Willis shoot his pants. Oh, and then it became this other thing. So, and then, from then on, I could believe that he would happily harm the wife.
Yeah, I'd kill her. And her hair.
Yep, her hair. If only he could just tame the hair. And then,
Holly.
Yes. And even when his henchmen are killed, he's like, go tell someone his brother's dead. You know, that kind of, he's that kind of guy. And then at the end, of course, has anyone done an Alan Rickman type character? Had Hans Gruber like
this? I don't think so. This is one of the only films I can think of where there's a larger number of bad guys, right? You know, villains up against a lone or a very small group of heroes.
Yeah.
And the villains don't ultimately start to turn on each other. Like, they're all killed off before that could even happen. Was Hans planning that? Was he really planning? Was he going to do a sort of Joker-style murder everyone and walk away with all the money himself?
I don't believe so, and I'll tell you why.
Again, this is an interesting part, right?
Well, you're right.
He seems honorable in his own way.
To me, it wasn't so much that he had honor, but that he was efficient as a thief.
Right.
I'm an excellent thief. Now, an excellent thief would assemble, one, a competent
Since I'm
group
up
of people.
To kidnapping, you should give me the proper respect.
There you go, see? So he's got an ego, which means I don't believe... If he had a team that would fuck on each other and then he fucks on them, that's not efficient. Do you know what I mean? And that's why he's blowing up the top of the helicopter of the tower or whatever to try and fuck off underneath. And that's a good ass plan, right? So no, I think he's too calculating for him to be. I'll blow up all my men in the top. No, they needed to all know. He didn't have the plan.
Okay,
there you are.
All right. Well, I think we have basically revealed our flip sides and spoken about them already. An incredible role from Alan Rickman, who, as far as I'm concerned, has never been bettered as far as a villain is. So we've done that countdown as well, and I'm sure he was my number one there too. All right, then Wayne, just give us the recap.
Yeah, 10 to 1.
Yep.
Okay, 10, Whitney Houston in The Bodyguard. 9, Jason Statham, Lock, Stock. 8, Eminem in 8 Mile. 7, Ewan McGregor in Shallow Grave. 6, Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours. 5, Charlton Copley, District 9. 4, Hang Esnor in The Killing Fields. 3, Haley Steinfeld, True Grit. 2, Alan Rickman in Die Hard. And 1, Eddie Norton in Primal Fire.
All right. And for me, 48 Hours is Eddie Murphy at number 10. 9, you could take your pick, but I went in the end with Jeff Cohen as Chunk in The Goonies. 8, Haley Steinfeld as in True Grit. From 7's, District 9, Charlton Copley's Vicars of Vandermeer. Daphne Keane as Laura/X-23 in Logan at number 6. Number 5, Lupita Nyong'o's Patsy in 12 Years a Slave. 4, Laurie Strode, a.k.a. Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween. Matilda, or Natalie Portman in Leon is my number 3. Number 2, here's where I had Edward Norton in Primal Fear. And my number 1, Hans Gruber's Alan Rickman in Die Hard.
And by the way, don't think I don't know that that's just winning. You put Alan higher, you're going to win.
I got one vote.
I'm fine with it.
One vote. Someone said whoever has Alan Rickman higher gets
Absolutely.
One vote.
I think it's Troy.
So I will not be pants down this
pants
week.
Pants down.
All right, that's I had no honorable mentions. I have to admit, this was hard.
Do you know what my honorable mentions were? Yes, Daphne Keane.
Yep.
I've been to Cameron Diaz in the mask.
Yeah, some people put that in there and it was on a lot of lists. And you know why I didn't put it in? Because all I remember is how hot she was.
Yes, no, and this is it. The reason I didn't put it in as well is because it's like, I remember Neil, from the Canadian?
Yeah.
He was sitting there watching The Mask with me. Halfway through the movie, he leans over and goes, "She's a babe." And I was like, you know, she looks different. And you know what? I was going to put Christian Bale, Empire of the Sun. But it wasn't his first film.
Oh, wasn't it?
He did some weird movie called Mio in the Land of Faraway in 1987. Otherwise, I would have put it in there.
Really?
Empire of the Sun, I couldn't believe that kid. And then I couldn't believe he was Christian Bale later on.
I didn't like that movie very much, I have to admit.
Really?
I was disappointed. I came to it way too late.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. I saw it when it was like popular. So there you go.
I watched it like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, then it may not have hung up. Yep, fair enough.
All right, that's Alice. What about yours? We wrap up every episode of The Countdown in a segment that we call The Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Jeremy Tregarty. It's number 3, Alan Rickman, Hans Gruber.
Hans.
Number 2, Edward Norton, Aaron Stampler in Primal Fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether this is taking the piss. Number 1, Tommy Wiseau, Johnny in the Room.
Taking the piss.
Smiley Simani, mate to us, said, number 3, this was interesting, and the reason I included Smiley's choices on this list. Mark Hamill, Star Wars. Do you think that was a great...
No. Looks...
But it is on this.
I get a lot of shit about this, all right? Star Wars, right?
A New Hope.
A New Hope, yes, is good because it's so different at the time that it came out.
Right.
If you looked at the scene, and like even Mark Hamill thinks, these scenes and the dialogue is so fucked, I couldn't possibly act well.
That's what I kind of agree. I don't think...
He's since become a... Like, his turns here and there, I like them. His Joker voice, but he's clearly a talented
voice actor.
Yeah.
I would suggest that Han Solo is the most believable character in that film, like in terms of selling it, Harrison Ford.
He's certainly the one I liked the most. Mm. But yeah.
Maybe I'm mixing those two up.
Interesting.
Number 2, Daphne Keane and Logan. And number 1 for Smiley, Natalie Portman in Leon. B Dizzle from the We Watch the Thing podcast. Sad news in the last couple of weeks that they will be closing their doors in very short order.
Oh, really?
Except B Dizzle is going to maybe roll it on himself, but without the graceful presence of Topher. So all the best to We Watch the Thing, boys. And I do hope the show continues in some capacity.
Come on back, boys.
Number 3, Kate Winslet in Heavenly Creatures. Number 2, Anna Paquin in The Piano.
Mm.
And number 1, Natalie Portman in Leon.
There you go. Clearly,
Billy wasn't worried about all having young actors or actresses on his list. Luke Alexander said, Jennifer Hudson in Dreamgirls. Shocked that didn't make your list, Wayne. Given...
I haven't seen it, mate.
Oh, that would be why. Alan Rickman in Die Hard. And here we go, number 1. Christopher Mintz-Plasse in Superbad.
I almost put that as a lark because I enjoyed Superbad so much and him being like McLovin forever, right? He's played nothing but McLovin. Oh, no, that's wrong. That's
kick
wrong.
Ass.
That's pretty McLovin-y though, don't you think? How are you not going to play McLovin?
That's all I remember him from, really.
Yeah, fair enough.
Stephen Burns at Edward Norton, Primal Fear. This might be too film snobbish, but Orson Welles and Citizen Kane.
Wait, in Bad Neighbors or Neighbors, Christopher Mintz-Plasse played a dude with a huge cock who fucked everyone. So yeah, he's got range. Sorry, keep going.
Or girth, yeah.
What
do you think of Orson Welles?
Yeah, look, I just came to it too late, guys. I appreciate Citizen Kane for all the things that it is, but he's not going to go on my list because I just wasn't emotionally invested in him.
Fair enough.
And
the one from Stephen Burns that certainly must be on Paul's list, and it was Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween.
There you are.
Charles Gretch had Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours. Edward Furlong in T2.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Charles? I mean, we think he's a bitch, but like... Do we? Do we think he's a...
Yeah.
He's somewhat bitch.
I think most people... I thought...
Look, it was an amazing film when he was in it.
Most people think
he's
the worst part of it.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
But, all right, maybe we missed the boat there. And Natalie Portman and Leon once again. Troy Spinner said there's a lot of great options, but honestly, as we had said, whoever has Alan Rickman higher wins.
There you go.
Nick Orton said, Hung S. Nure, The Killing Fields.
Nice.
There you are. Jason Statham, Lock, Stock, and 2 Smoking Barrels.
Yay!
And Jean Louisa Kelly played Tia and Uncle Buck. I reckon 2 out of 3, that's a good vote for you.
Uncle Buck.
Hmm.
All right.
Josh Ragland had Frances McDormand in Blood Simple. That surprises me.
I haven't seen
Blood
Simple.
But a bunch of people, including some lists online, picked it.
Is it? Have you seen it?
It's Coen Brothers' first film.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because Frances McDormand married one of the Coen Brothers.
I didn't know that.
But it's, I don't know, I just thought it was a really average noir film. So.
Okay, interesting.
Jason Schwartzman in Rushmore.
I haven't seen that either, but I've been told I should see it.
And number 1, Edward Norton in Primal Fear.
Boom.
David Powell, Patron Extraordinaire, and moderator to the Facebook list community. Links in the show notes. Get on board with the conversations there. He said, I'm going to skip the Rickman or Ed Norton as they're obviously going to be high on everyone's list. Correct.
Apparently, good call.
Malcolm McDowell, if you're going to have a debut, you may as well star as in the 12th greatest British film of the 20th century, according to the British Film Institute's top 100 films.
If.
Yeah. Martin Sheen in Badlands. What a fucking debut. Jesus. And number one, Richard E. Grant with Nail and I.
Paul loves that show.
I don't think you were a big fan either, to be honest.
Yeah, it's, again, before our time. And also, we're not British enough to really get to it.
Glenn Sutherland said, Alan Rickman has to be the hands down winner this week.
Oh, very good. That's not bad at all.
Paid that one. That was good. And lastly, then, we have from Dan Trulli, knowing that Rickman will be everyone's number one, Francis McDormand, Blood Simple, John Boyega in Attack the Block, and Hayley Steinfeld in True Grit, and Blake Jarvis had Daphne Keane in Logan, Edward Norton in Primal Fear, and again, Alan Rickman in Die Hard.
Solid.
I think we're all on the same page as far as acting day butts go.
Damn right.
All right, Wayne. Well, how do the people let us know what they think about the topics at hand, or indeed give us feedback week in and week out?
Google us. You'll find us. Or hit us up at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at thecountdownpc. You can like and follow the show there. You can also follow the show Podbean or podbean.com. And check out ccradio.com.au, ccradio.com.au, slower and more radio voicey, to get involved with nice. Comic Confidential and Believe. All right, that's episode 334, Wayne. Episode 335. What's happening?
We're going to flip one that we did a little while back.
Last week.
Yes. It's going to be called The Top 10 Undeservedly Maligned Rotten Tomatoes Films.
Ooh, and what do we mean by that?
Well, we mean that when Rotten Tomatoes did a rating of 30% or lower, and we disagreed with that rating, that's the picks we're going to be. We like them. Most people hate them.
Inconceivable.
Yes. You like that shit? I'm quick. I'm all over it.
It was helped by Wayne's
comedic timing.
All right, that is it for this week's episode. We're looking forward to the next one. Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Not even sure why.
Fuck you.
Just fuck you. Because we will catch you next time. See ya.